My focus isn't on the value of procrastination. Some people claim there is, because they claim that there's no particular reason to think that your conscious ordering of the importance of tasks will be preferable to your unconscious ordering of the importance of tasks. But I don't claim that. My focus is on people who do procrastinate. Not encouraging people who don't procrastinate to start, but people who do procrastinate and feel guilty about it. And I want to say, probably, if you're like me, you don't have much to feel guilty about. Matter of fact, I wrote this because one day I was sitting there feeling guilty about not getting something done, something that was over deadline or something. And it occurred to me, you know, around campus, I'm known as a guy that gets a lot done. That's kind of a paradox. And, well, I do get a lot done. I get a lot done by not doing things that are, in some sense, more important. That's structured procrastination. So if you're a structured procrastinator, you know, you don't need to feel like a complete jerk. But the trick is, don't follow bad advice. The bad advice is, well, if you procrastinate, it's because you're taking on too much and you need to cut down so that you just have one thing to do and then you do it. No, if you just have one thing to do, you'll lie and watch TV and feel really bad about not doing it.
That's a lack of achievement of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's deep reasons why people procrastinate. Some people are nutty and they can't get – my website won't do them any good. They need to go to a shrink. Some people are, you know, there's various theories. There's a lot of good research being done on it, not by me. I just introspect and write. But a lot of people are perfectionists, and I think if you're a perfectionist, the reason you procrastinate is often because – you've agreed to do something. So, like somebody says, will you write a review of this book? And I say, oh, yeah, I'll write a review of that book. I'll write the best review that's ever been written of that book. I'll write a review of the book. So people say, you don't need to read the book. Just read Perry's review. I'll write reviews like my old friend Alonzo Church used to do in the Journal of Symbolic Logic so that there's just results in the reviews. And the cognoscendi know that. You've got to read his reviews. So I put the stakes so high that there's no reasonable way I can do it, right? And then, subconsciously, I just wait until the last minute as a way of giving myself permission to do a, looking for the right public radio word, inadequate or barely adequate job.
A finished.
Yeah, to get it finished in a reasonable way that people won't complain about, which was the reasonable thing to do in the first place, right? So if you're a perfectionist, you can help yourself by forcing yourself, if you're capable of forcing yourself to do anything, to make that decision to do a barely adequate job right when you get the task. Because most tasks, you know, your dean wants a memo on, you know, whether chalkboards or, you know, whether whiteboards or real blackboards are better for philosophy or... You know, somebody you need to write some lies about some staff member that's having a child and needs a raise. You know, there's no use trying to be Winston Churchill about it.
Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah, get it out of the way.
You know, you've just spoken to almost every journalist I know. I'm sure there are other professions.
Oh, yeah.
But almost every journalist fits into this category.
Yeah, well, and you've got institutional things that are really really horrible that help you, like Pulitzer Prizes. You know, everybody's journalist dreams about getting a Pulitzer Prize. I bet a lot of them got a Pulitzer Prize for something they wrote while they were procrastinating something else. Like filling out their divorce papers or something.
You are the co-host of a radio program called Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, right.
Some people might hear that title and roll their eyes. People think, what in the world will they talk about? Well, it's on more than a couple of dozen stations. And if you look at the subjects that have been covered, it's everything.
Everything.
Marriage, abortion, but it's also movies. You give annual awards to movies.
Absolutely. Well, we believe philosophy isn't just a set of topics. There are a set of, you know, reasonably philosophical topics that always have been, at least in part, talked about by philosophers like freedom and consciousness. But any topic... If our catchline is the program that questions everything except your intelligence, slightly pompous, but people like it. If you look for hidden assumptions, that's philosophy, and that's really not done much in American media. Hiding assumptions is done a lot, but looking for hidden assumptions, or looking for the kind of ideological basis for something. For example, take something like abortion. You hear a lot of, maybe I'm a little outdated, but over the last 20 years, a lot of shows about abortion and so forth, and a lot of them get up to the point and say, well, there's this fundamental question, there's a fundamental philosophical question. I mean, is there a soul or is there not a soul? Is a person just a live human being? Is there something more than that? Well, those are really philosophical questions. So let's go on to, it's frightening. People want to punt. Ken and I aren't frightened.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we know the truth. It's just that we know that nobody else knows the truth, so that we might as well talk about it.
Can almost any subject be put into a philosophical discussion?
Well, I think so. I mean, because there's always the what is question. You might say, well, rocks. Well, what is a rock? When is a pebble a rock? Is there a sharp line between a pebble and a rock? Right? How about sand? How many grains of sand does it take to make a pile? There's probably a couple thousand published pages on that issue.
But those seem to be the very sorts of questions that sometimes create the biggest eye rolls among people.
Absolutely.
They say, I'm not that. And that's what I think some people have the idea that what a philosophical discussion is.
Yeah. You search for the trivial. But the interesting thing is that some of the questions you just come up with there, what is a rock? When is a pebble a rock? The reason we, in philosophy classes, the reason people like Richard and I try to force students to think about those things is that the same kind of issues come up in much more meaty topics like abortion. When is a fetus become a person? Is there a sharp line? Does there have to be a sharp line? Does it make sense for there not to be a sharp line? And come to think of it, at the other end of life. When does a person cease to be a person? If you have Alzheimer's in the late stages, you're still a live human being. Are you still a person if you don't have any memories that connect you with the past and your personality is totally changed? Are you a person but maybe a different person? Well, those are interesting questions. They may still get some eye rolls, but those are actually questions that people confront. Particularly the questions about people in the late stages of life. I mean, if Grandpa, when he was younger, said, whatever you do, don't sell the farm, keep it in the family. It's really important to me. And Grandpa in his Alzheimer's version says, why don't you sell that damn farm? Well, an ordinary person has the right to change their mind, but do we have some loyalty to the earlier grandpa that the later Alzheimer's-ridden grandpa can't negate? Those are fundamental questions, but when you push them, you get into some of the same issues that these eye-rolling questions. We should have a program on eye rollers. I like that. Come up with the most eye-rolling philosophical questions and see if we can find some interest in them.